This is the House Judiciary Committee, May 1st, 1985, full committee.
Order, please. We're expecting a couple members here shortly, Representative Burton and Representative Kopetsky. I'd like to move from our ordered agenda just a bit to deal with some issues I think we can without either of them necessarily being here. Representative Bunn is available just in conference if necessary. I'd like to deal first with 2428 relating to grandparent visitation rights. We have counsel to review the information on the status of the bill, please.
We had a hearing on the bill on March 22nd and then subsequent work session on April 19th. At April 19th work session, we considered various amendments. We had Representative Kopetsky's amendments, which would limit grandparent visitation to marriage dissolution situations. Those amendments passed. We also had Representative Bunn. He had some LC amendments 2428-2. They had additional hand and gross amendments, which would allow custodial parents of the state, and it would be grandparent visitation would be handled in the regular visitation hearing. There was also a consideration of Representative Campbell's amendment that was rejected. The bill was approved for due pass as amended to the full committee.
Thank you. And those amendments were adopted, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Representative Kopetsky and I know Representative Bunn both worked on the amendments here. Representative Bunn, may I recognize you for the purpose of the motion?
I want to be sure there aren't any other motions first.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
I need to ask a couple of questions. As the bill stands now, the only time the grandparents would have visitation rights if there was a disillusionment. A death of one of the spouses and so forth, is that correct? The bill is written now.
Hi. Representative Kopetsky could answer that. He's not here. I believe that's correct. And Mr. Bree, if you can verify that one way or the other, I believe that's a somewhat simplified, but I think basically accurate statement, Representative Bellamy.
Yeah. We do have both the Kopetsky and Bunn amendments, their LC draft 2420-3, 429, the testing materials. And the current law does allow grandparent visitation when the child is in the custody of a surviving parent. This bill would also allow grandparent visitation to be considered as an issue in a child custody hearing when dissolution, separation, and alone was considered. And this doesn't have any effect on the normal family relations when family, you know, of course, families don't always agree to have their grandparents visit the children.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Campbell introduced a measure, introduced it on behalf of a constituent that started out. But the situation is that the parents are not divorced or separated. It's a situation where the parents, evidently because the grandparents didn't will them some land, the parents decided that they won't allow them to see grandchildren. And Representative Campbell asked me if that isn't defeating a major purpose of the bill, and I guess we need to have some discussion on this. And this discussion took place after the subcommittee action.
Counsel, if you want to try to respond further, I haven't spoken with Representative Campbell. I do recall that factual situation being discussed, and I guess it comes down to a policy decision in terms of if you're going to open the door all the way to allow grandparents at any time to assert this opportunity to go to court if there's a dispute within the family. And individuals are going to come down on different sides of that issue. And this is, it's true, limits the circumstances more than the chief sponsor and perhaps would desire, and certainly it's not going to address that factual situation that you spoke to. But that's kind of the policy choice, and it came out of, I happen to be the only no vote. I'm prepared, however, to support the amended bill today. And that's the background, I guess. If anyone else wants to try to respond, I'm more than welcome to present them.
Mr. Chairman, the only thing I would say, I did vote in the subcommittee against the Petsky amendments, although I certainly understand the policy issue thrust that they made. And I think it is basically a policy approach, whether you want to have grandparents' rights for all grandparents or just in the divorce situation. I don't care to indicate a particular policy preference.
Mr. Brea?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would like to point out that this bill does cover legal separations. So if there was a legal separation, there would be no problem.
Question.
Representative Miller.
But it would have to be a legal separation.
Correct.
Representative Miller.
Question maybe for those on the subcommittee. A couple days ago we talked about a bill where we were encountering relationships that weren't necessarily recognized by the law for purposes of granting custody. Is this consistent with that? We said where there was an emotional tie that would allow one, therefore, to have some kind of rights in gaining custody over a child, even though there wasn't a marital relationship.
That was House Bill 2460, which was introduced at the request of the Committee Board and Families.
Whether or not it makes a difference, I don't know. I guess the question is this kind of on track with what we're doing in that bill? Or?
Well, I guess my personal opinion is that the issues are sufficiently distinct that they ought not necessarily to track. I don't know if an exact parallel can be drawn. In my mind, the two issues and the two bills are distinguishable, but there may be opinion otherwise. Representative Vaughn.
I would move the bill to the floor with the pass recommendation as amended.
Thank you. Representative Vaughn moves House Bill 2428. To the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Representative Kopetsky, we're dealing with House Bill 2428, the grandparents' visitation bill, which came to the full committee after favorable adoption of amendments, including ones which you had offered. And there's been some discussion in terms of the policy choice made in the amendments that recognize some extension of the rights of grandparents to be parties in certain proceedings, but it's obviously less than the sponsor had originally sought. And we kind of responded, I think. But no further discussion? Comment? If there's no further discussion on the motion, the clerk will call the bill. Call the roll, rather.
Bellamy?
No.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Kopetsky?
No.
Miller?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
No.
Springer?
Aye.
Kopetsky, how many votes is that?
It's five.
Okay.
I count five aye votes. Does anyone have anything different?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to file notice of possible minority report.
Okay. Anything else on this bill?
Yeah. Sure. As the oldest member of the committee, I'll carry this if it isn't. Unless there's somebody else who wants it.
Well, I was going to ask if Representative Campbell wanted to carry it as a prime sponsor.
Oh, but, I didn't
know. Want to carry the minority report.
Well, that's not his privilege to carry the minority report, unfortunately.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kopetsky?
Do you accept the motion to reconsider the vote on House Bill 2428?
I would.
I'd
Representative Kopetsky?
I move that we reconsider the vote on House Bill 2428.
Okay, Representative Kopetsky, having You were a no vote, were you not, Representative Kopetsky?
Vote on.
I'm afraid that you were not on the prevailing side.
Is that, well, that's your interpretation of the rule, that the same, that that would hold, that rule would hold for the committee action as well? Or can any member, regardless of their vote?
No, I would be my ruling that one must be on the prevailing side to move for reconsideration. And Representative Kopetsky, the chair would make that motion if it's your desire to place that issue before the committee.
Yes,
the chair, having voted on the prevailing side, would move for reconsideration. Representative Dunn?
I don't even know if I want to ask why. But I am trying to figure out what's going on.
Well, let me just speak, if I may. Representative Bone, I, speaking as the chair of the committee, I would hope that if there's a problem that brings some members to feel that a minority report is the only way in which they can present their issue to the floor, so be it. I guess I wasn't aware that this possibility might arise, and I would prefer, if we can, to resolve this in the committee or in subcommittee, if that's possible. I would like to think that is possible, so we avoid the majority-minority report issue. If it turns out that there is no way around that, so be it. But at this point, I would like to allow an opportunity to, if there is a division of opinion, to try to resolve that again within the committee.
Might I inquire of the party giving notice of a possible minority report whether they feel agreeable to that approach?
Representative Phillips?
The approach being send it back to a subcommittee and try and work out the difficulties.
That would be my purpose in making the motion for reconsideration, would be to permit the parties to try to work further to resolve their differences, if that's possible.
I guess there was one vote that really shocked me on this, this time around because of the maker of the amendments to the bill. So. I guess since I wasn't a part of all the subcommittee activity, I would have no objection if you did want to go back and it was some discussion. Did I say that politely enough?
Great job.
Okay.
Okay. What do you feel?
Mr. Chairman, as someone who was not on the subcommittee, I feel at a real disadvantage. I mean, the step in here is sort of a hornet's nest, and we don't even know what all the dissension is about. And we. Well, maybe we just send it back and hope it resolves, but I'd just like to know what's going on.
Mr. Chair.
Me too, Representative Bell.
I don't totally know what's going on either, but my point, reason for voting no is that in the subcommittee, I didn't totally understand. That we eliminated the chief purpose of the bill. And I guess I agreed with the amendments as they were drafted, particularly Representative Bunn's, I think is spelled out very clearly leaving out of state. But I guess that I would be interested. I think Representative Kopetsky's amendments were probably better amendments, clearly defined, but I think they went a little bit too far now that I've discussed with the chief sponsor of the bill.
Okay. Representative Kopetsky and then Representative Bunn.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess in reviewing the vote before it got to me, since one of the supporters of the measure had changed from a yes vote to a no vote in subcommittee from the subcommittee vote, then as chair of the subcommittee, I feel responsible that perhaps the subcommittee take another look if there is some misunderstanding about the amendments adopted in subcommittee, and therefore would don't see a need for a minority report on this bill. I think we can work this out in subcommittee, and I'm sorry that we've taken full committee's time on this, and would urge members to send it back, as they say.
Representative Dunn?
Mr. Chairman, after listening to the debate, I'm going to oppose the reconsideration because I'm not at all convinced we can work it out in subcommittee. I think it's a definite split of attitude. I'm comfortable with voting on the issue on the floor. I think there's danger of losing the bill if we don't do that. I prefer we just vote it out.
Okay. Is there further discussion on the motion to reconsider the vote? That's correct. Okay, and again, the chair, in making the motion, the purpose and the upon, if the motion to reconsider is successful, would be to, as the chair of the subcommittee and some others have expressed, would be to take it back to subcommittee to try to resolve the differences, and hopefully that will be the case, and there would not be any undue delay in the bill. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Donnie?
No.
Bun?
No.
Britton?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Petsky?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. The vote is reconsidered. And pursuant to my earlier announcement, it'd be my intention to take this bill back to the subcommittee. And Representative Kapetsky, I know that you and others will schedule this promptly for
and that's my
action as expeditious as possible on the subject. Probably not this afternoon.
Tuesday, if council could put it on Tuesdays. The marathon, that's right.
Okay. Let's return to the order. Let me just note there were two additional bills that were canceled from our full committee session. The one is 2220, and I'm advised by Council Ms. Hammond that the reason for that was to permit the Department of Justice to review in some detail some amendments which had been considered and adopted at the subcommittee level. And rather than proceed today without allowing the Department of Justice to assure us that those amendments are satisfactory to them, we thought it was best to delay this consideration to make sure we have that assurance. So that will be scheduled for our next full committee, which will be no later than next Wednesday. 2671 has to do with the recoupment issue, and because we have discussed before and are concerned about any potential revenue loss as it relates to issues affecting the Judicial Department, and that possibility exists in this bill, we've asked the Judicial Department folks to examine again very carefully their fiscal impact and, if possible, assure us that there will be a net minimal or zero impact on this bill as relates to recoupment. And they need a little more time to be able to reach that recommendation, and so that's the reason that that has been carried over. Let's deal with 2638. Council?
Okay. This is a bill which discusses the standards to be set for the use of deadly force by police officers. In March of this year, the United States Supreme Court rendered a decision called Tennessee versus Carter, in which they discussed the circumstances under which a police officer or a peace officer might use deadly force. The standards had to do with whether a police officer needs reasonable cause to believe that deadly force is necessary or whether it should be probable cause, and the committee should know that there's a fine distinction between reasonable belief and probable cause. However, in subcommittee, the subcommittee discussed whether they should use reasonable belief or probable cause, and in light of the Supreme Court's decision, they decided to use probable cause as a standard where a suspect is in custody or being apprehended and the officer has information which gives him or her probable cause to believe that the suspect has committed or will inflict serious physical harm on the officer or another. So if you look at there is a reconstituted bill attached to your staff measure analysis. If you look at it, you'll see there is some language there that's set out. You'll see that in subsection B and C, the committee adopted probable cause. The only exception to that is in section A, where the standard reasonable belief to use deadly force where necessary was left, and that is in a situation where an officer is defending him or herself and someone else, and in that case it is a slightly reduced standard. However, I think it was the subcommittee's feeling, and when I was voting on this issue, that we have amended the Oregon Revised Statute to reflect the Supreme Court's decision, and it's something that has a very good chance and probably will pass constitutional muster if that statute is challenged. There was, as I understand it, no physical impact, and all the amendments were adopted in subcommittee.
Okay. The amendments have been adopted, is that correct?
Yes. Could I make one more comment, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Two things I left out. One is that the subcommittee also adopted a definition. Well, the Supreme Court said that a peace officer had to give a warning of using deadly force where feasible. That has been incorporated into the bill. And secondly, the bill also has a provision in it that provides immunity to officers or agencies for any claims for injuries or damages when a peace officer doesn't use deadly force. So they've got legal immunity if they err on the side of caution and don't use deadly force when some injury arises from that situation.
Okay. And you're satisfied that the drafted amendments accurately reflect the action taken in the subcommittee conceptually?
Yes.
Okay.
Very carefully.
Okay. We, I believe, had a lot of discussion on this, a lot of discussion and a lot of careful work went into this in subcommittee, and recognizing that there may still be reasonable people can disagree, if you will, in terms of the exact language to use, I'm satisfied this is about the best we can do under the circumstances to try to reflect perhaps a majority opinion, or at least our careful review of the Supreme Court decision language. So I'd be prepared to accept a motion on the bill. Representative Phillips?
I'd move House Bill 2638 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Due pass as amended?
Yes.
Yes. Representative Phillips moves House Bill 2638 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Is there further discussion? Representative Bergen?
I wasn't in the discussion or on that subcommittee, and could I get an explanation of under section 1, I think it is, if I can follow this. This is on the engrossed version, sub 4, about public bodies being exempted from immunity. Is that a new provision?
It's new language. It would be new language added.
Was that part of the Supreme Court direction?
No, the Supreme Court did not discuss the idea of immunity for police officers. That was, as I understand it, that's a suggestion from proponents of the bill. I don't recall reading anything in the decision that talked about that.
Well, I wonder if I could just have some explanation of that from somebody on the committee. That's quite a policy change, I think.
Is present. I think he's
Well, I don't want to reopen
from the committee. I'd like to hear from the committee.
I personally don't recall a lot of discussion or any controversy about this section, in that it was intended to protect law enforcement officers. And I think my interpretation of it is that it does offer additional protection to law enforcement officers if, in the exercise of their judgment, they choose not to use such force. They are not going to be second-guessed in a civil court and exposed to liability if they've erred on the side of caution, which is we're removing. I doubt that any officer out there in the field is going to think and either exercise that responsibility or not exercise it based upon the potential civil liability. But possibly that could occur, and we don't want that to interrupt or to interfere with that judgment out in the street.
Thank you.
That's the best I can do. Are there further questions? Comment? Any further discussion? Okay, if not, the clerk will call the roll on Representative Phillips' motion on House Bill 2638.
Bowman?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Petsky?
Aye.
Miller?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Are there any volunteers on this? Representative Phillips, I think that's fine if you wish to do so.
I'm willing to get killed on the floor. I mean,
deadly force.
Okay. I want to be careful with jokes about this subject.
Yeah.
This is not the greatest time for this bill.
Okay, Representative Phillips, you're next up on the firing line here, I think, on 2384.
Okay.
Fire.
Stabbing.
So, penetrating issue.
Okay.
The cutting edge.
The cutting edge of 2384. I believe, Council, you want to give a report or you just want to wrestle?
Yes.
Why don't we allow Council to introduce and describe briefly the amendments? And I would note at this point that thanks or appreciation goes to Representative Phillips because he's worked long and hard on this subject, and it's a complex and obviously controversial area of the law. And I know he's tried to make sure that any changes or amendments are not going to harm any particular group which has an interest in this subject, and there's some pretty significant interests represented. And I know he's also worked closely with the vice chair, and I think to each of those individuals, I want to thank you for cleaning up the bill in the best manner possible so we have an issue that's clearly presented to the floor. Representative Phillips, we'll hear from you after council.
All right. Just to refresh the committee's recollection, this bill was voted out of full committee 2 weeks ago. It went to the floor. Apparently, as I understand it, on the floor, there were some concerns about some of the language in the bill, and so it came back and has come back to full committee. Those concerns are reflected in your hand engrossed bill that is before you. It says House Amendments to House Bill 2384. And the concerns had to do with cleaning up language in Section 3, Subsection 1B, which said carries concealed in any manner on or about the person. We changed that to carries any firearm concealed in any manner upon the person, taken out or about, and we've taken out or about in Section 2 also. And then the second change has to do with Subsection C, which says carries concealed and readily accessible about the person with any vehicle. And the second one has to do with someone who may be carrying a firearm in the trunk of their car, and there was concern that that would be a violation of the law, and it's not a good idea. So this language changed it to say that there would be a violation if you were carrying the weapon concealed and readily accessible to the person who's carrying it, not if you just were carrying it, say, in the trunk of your car. And those are the two changes that were suggested and you have before you.
Okay, Representative Phillips, I believe a motion on the amendments would be appropriate at this time.
Okay, I would move the amendments as delineated by council to House Bill 2384.
Okay, and just so we're sure, I believe we've got a hand engrossed version of the amendments that are the new amendments that you're moving, Representative.
Correct.
Plus the old amendments. Yeah.
Okay. Representative Phillips moves amendments to the amended House Bill 2384, and those amendments are before us on an engrossed version of the first set of amendments. Representative Miller.
Chairman, I'm going to further move to amend in a friendly way on page 2, line 12, that we delete the language "in any manner." Feeling is it's a bit too loose. The deletion will also satisfy one of those groups that remains nameless that we referred to earlier.
Okay. Representative Miller moves a friendly amendment to the amendments proposed by Representative Phillips on page 2, line 12, to delete the language in any manner. Representative Phillips, would you accept that as a friendly amendment?
You bet. And if anybody wants an explanation, I'll be glad to give it to them as to what that means.
Sure.
Okay. Just since Representative Phillips is wondering what the extent that, if you were going to a gun show or going hunting in Alaska and you were to carry in a gun case a weapon, there was some concern that that might be construed to be in any manner, although when I checked with the DAs that had never been a problem, they wanted to make sure it was very clean and clear. What we're trying to do throughout this whole thing is get people who conceal weapons on themselves, and that's why if we take that route and leave the word upon themselves, we've met everybody's desire, and that's why it's a friendly amendment.
Thank you. Okay. Is there further discussion on the friendly amendment? Lieutenant Kopetsky.
I think in terms of consistency with the friendly amendment by Representative Miller, in any manner, on page 1, line 17, the same phrase is used.
Okay. Representative Miller, Representative Phillips, would you accept that as a further friendly amendment?
I will note that since the purpose of 240 and 250 originally was to move and use firearms only in 250 and other weapons in 240, that's why there was not an expression for that, but there doesn't seem to be any conflict with moving it out either. The issue is still somebody carrying a knife or switchblade on themselves.
Okay. Representative Miller, Representative